Hello, I'm author Carnigaldon. Welcome to the next instalment of Wolf of the Plains.
The horses of the Alkanut were out on the ragged edge of the tribe, whinnying and tossing their heads in the excitement of spring. The last of the gares sat on dusty ground by the corrals, baked and bare of any ornament. Even the door was unpainted. Temujin sighed at the thought of spending his year with such a poor family. From the look of the gare, his wife's family would be hard-pressed even to feed him. Yesuge's face was blank, and Temujin tried hard to copy it. The father of the girl came out, smiling and bowing. His clothes were black with old grease and dirt. He showed a toothless mouth when he smiled. The smell of urine was a sharp tang in the air, and Temujin could not even see a latrine pit nearby. It was hard not to be revolted after the clean gear his mother kept. He took the man's dark hand when it was offered, and went inside to drink yet another bowl of the salty tea. His spirits sank further at the broken wood beds and lack of paint. The old man woke his wife with a slap and set her to boiling a kettle. Enk could not hide his cheerful mood. He smiled around at the bare felt and wooden lattice repaired in 100 places.
"We are honoured to be in your home, Shriya," he said to the woman, who bowed her head briefly before pouring the tea.
Enk's good humour was growing visibly as he addressed her husband.
"Bring your daughter, Shaloi. The boy's father wants to see her."
The wiry little man showed his toothless gums again and went out. Temujin heard a high voice yelling, and Shaloi brought the grubby girl in, struggling all the way. He struck her 3 times in quick succession on the face and legs. Tears sprang into her eyes, though she fought them with the same determination as she had fought her father.
"This is Borta," Enk said slyly. "She will make your son a good and loyal wife, I'm certain."
"She looks a little old," Yesuge said doubtfully.
The girl writhed from her father's grip and went to sit on the other side of the gare, as far from them as she could get.
Enk shrugged. "She is 14, but there has been no blood. Perhaps because she's thin. There have been other suitors, of course, but they want a placid girl instead of one with fire in her. She will make a fine mother for wolves."
The girl in question picked up a shoe and threw it at Enk. Temujin was close enough to snatch it out of the air, and she stared malevolently at him. Yesuge crossed the gare, and something about him made her go still. He was large for his own people, and larger still for the Alkanut, who tended towards delicacy. He touched her gently under the chin, lifting her head.
"My son will need a strong wife," he said, looking into her eyes. "I think she will be beautiful when she has grown."
The little girl broke her unnatural stillness and tried to slap his hand, though he was too fast for her. Yesuge smiled.
"I like her. I accept the betrothal."
Enk hid his displeasure behind a weak smile.
"I am pleased to have found a good match for your son."
Yesuge stretched, towering over them all.
"I will return for him in a year, Enk. Teach him discipline. But remember that one day he will be a man, and he may come back to pay his debts to the Alkanut."
The threat was not lost on Enk, and he clenched his jaw rather than reply before he had mastered himself.
"It is a hard life in the gares of the Alkanut. We will give you back a warrior as well as a wife for him."
Temujin came abruptly from sleep, yanked off his pallet and onto the wooden floor. He scrambled up, stifling a cry of pain as he cracked his shin on some unseen obstacle in the darkness. It was not yet dawn, and the camp of the Alkanut was silent.
"Awake yet?"
Shaloi said. Temujin turned towards the sound and clenched his fists. He had a bruise on his face from where the old man had struck him the evening before. Shaloi used his bony hands to enforce every order, whether he was moving a dog out of his path or starting his daughter or wife to some task. Borta had felt her father's fists more than a few times on that first evening. Temujin heard a creak of hinges as Shaloi opened the door, letting in enough cold starlight for Temujin to edge past the sleeping forms of Borta and her mother. Despite his rough ways, Shaloi was Khan in his own home, and Temujin could only bow his head. He shivered as he stepped outside, feeling a deep ache of hunger. The herds were dark figures under the starlight. The nights were still cold, and he saw a crust of ice on the ground. Temujin had the sinking feeling that the day would be long and hard. He felt Sholoi's grip on his arm. The old man held a wooden bucket, and as Temujin took it, he picked up another, pressing it into his free hand.
Fill them quick, boy!
The stove had been lit by the time Temujin returned from the river, and Borta had vanished. Sholoi's grim little wife, Shriya, was fussing around the stove. She had not spoken a word to him since his arrival. Temujin looked thirstily at the pot of tea, but Sholoi guided him back out into the darkness with a two-fingered grip on his bicep.
You'll join the Felters later. Can you see her?
No.
Sholoi grimaced.
Not much good to me, boy, are you? I can carry my own buckets. When it's light, you can collect sheep turds for the stove. Can you ride herd?
I've done it, Temujin replied. I can tan leather and braid rope for bridles and saddles. I can carve wood, horn and bone.
He heard the old man snort.
I don't need a saddle for a horse I don't have, do I?
Temujin saw the old man's blow coming and slipped it, turning his head. Sholoi wasn't fooled and thumped at him until he fell sideways. Sholoi kicked his ribs, and Temujin lost his temper. He sprang up fast. Every instinct told him to strike back. And yet what could he do? Kill the old man? He didn't think he would live long past Sholoi's first shout for help. Temujin felt a drip of blood come from his nostril onto his top lip and smeared it with an angry gesture. Sholoi chuckled.
I've broken ponies better than you, boy.
There was a world of scorn in his voice.
You're no better than I thought you were.
Under the noon sun, Temujin wiped sweat from his eyes, his stomach rumbling. For breakfast, Shriya had given him a bowl of salt tea and a curd of cheese as long as his thumb and as hard as bone. He had put it into his cheek to suck, but it had barely begun to soften by noon. Sholoi had been given 3 hot pouches of unleavened bread and spiced mutton. The smell had made Temujin's mouth water. While Sholoi greased leathers and checked the hooves of every Ulkanut pony, Temujin had carried great bales of fleeces to where the women of the tribe were laying them out on felting mats of ancient cloth. Each one was heavier than anything he had ever carried before, but he had managed to stagger with them across the camp, attracting the stares and excited chatter of small children. His calves and back had begun to burn, but he was not allowed to stop. By the 10th bale, Sholoi had ceased greasing to watch his faltering progress, and Temujin saw some of the men grinning and muttering bets to each other. But he was past caring when he fell at last, his legs limp under him. No one came to help him up, and had never been so desperately unhappy as in that moment of silence while the Ulkanut watched him rise. There was no pity or humour on a single one of the hard faces, and when he finally stood, he felt their dislike feed his spirit. Though every panting breath seemed to scorch him, he smiled at them. To his pleasure, some of them turned away. He knew someone was approaching from the way the expressions of the others changed. Temujin stood with the bale balanced on a shoulder as he turned to see who. Koke. Temujin showed his cousin the cold face, doing his best to disconcert the boy. It didn't work. Koke came first, but there were other boys behind him, bright-eyed and dangerous. Pick that bale up, boy, Koke said, grinning. Temujin felt a push that overbalanced the bale, and he almost went with it. He staggered into Koke and was shoved roughly away. He threw a straight punch that rocked Koke's head back. In moments they were rolling on the dusty ground. One of the other boys rushed in and kicked Temujin in the stomach, winding him. He cried out in anger, but another one kicked him in the back as he struggled to rise. Koke was bleeding from his nose, but he grappled him again, pressing his head into the earth while 2 more boys sat on his chest and legs, flattening him with their weight. Temujin was too tired to throw them off. He struggled madly, but the dust filled every breath, and soon he was choking and clawing at them. He had one of the boys around the throat, and Koke was punching at his head to make him let go. After that, he lost a little time, and the noise seemed to go away. He did not wake exactly, nor had he slept, but he came back as if he was surfacing from a dream when a bucket was upended over his head. Temujin gasped at the cold water running down him in streams of diluted blood and muddy filth. Sholoi held him upright, and Temujin saw that the old man had sent the boys scurrying away. He saw nothing but irritation in Sholoi's eyes as the old man clicked his fingers in front of his face to catch his attention.
"You must fetch more water now that I've emptied this bucket,"
he heard Sholoi say, as if from far away.
"After that, it will help beat the fleeces until we eat. If you work hard, you will have meat and hot bread to give you strength."
He looked disgusted.
"I think he's still dizzy. He needs a thicker skull, this one, like his brother. That boy had a head like a yak."
"I hear you," Temujin said irritably, shaking off the last of his weakness.
He snatched the bucket, not troubling to hide his anger. He would finish the fight Koke had started. As Yesuge rode through a vast green valley, he saw the moving specks of riders in the far distance and set his mouth in a firm line. He snorted to himself as he saw them turn towards him, noting the rise of dust as they kicked their mounts into a gallop. The furthest outriders of his wolves were still 2 days away, and he would be pushed to lose the raiders on such open land. He started his gelding galloping. His eyes travelled feverishly along the hills, seeing the trees on the high ridges like distant eyelashes. They would not hide him. He needed a sheltered valley where woods stretched across the bones of the earth. With irritation growling deep in his chest, he rode on. When he looked back, the riders were closer, and he saw there were five of them in the pursuit. He showed his teeth in the wind as he rode. If they knew who they were chasing, they would not be so rash. If they pressed him, he would butcher the lot of them, he told himself, feeling the twinges of an old excitement. He was the Khan of Wolves, and he feared no man. Temujin winced as the raw wolves snagged his red fingers for the 100th time. The smallest children carried buckets of water to sprinkle on each layer of the woolen fleeces. Koke and the other boys tied the fleeces onto upright skins on frames, then beat them with sticks until the sweat ran off them in streams. After the fleeces had been thrashed into softness, the women used the width of their outstretched arms to measure out one auld. These they stretched on the felting cloths, smoothing and teasing the snags until they resembled a single white mat. Temujin had watched his hands redden and grow sore as the day wore on, while Koke mocked him and had the women giggling at his discomfort. It did not matter. There was a subtle pleasure in knowing the time would come when he would give Koke back what he deserved. When the mats were smooth and regular, an Alkanut pony was backed up and the great expanse of white wool rolled onto a long cylinder. Temujin would have given a great deal to be the one who dragged it for miles away from those people. Instead, the job went to Laughing Koke. Temujin kept his head down and waited for the next break of mare's milk and a pouch of vegetables and mutton. His arms and back ached as if someone stuck a knife in him with every movement, but he endured. He seemed to have been smashing his stick into stinking wool or rolling it or carrying it forever. He could hardly believe it was still his first day. It was Enk who brought a pot filled with fermented milk to give them the strength to finish. As the sun touched the hills in the west, each of them had a ladle full of the clear liquid known as black arag, which looked like water but burned. Temujin choked on his, coughing. He wiped his mouth and then gasped with pain as the liquid found his broken skin and stung like fire. Sholoi laughed until Temujin thought he would have a seizure and die, but the old man survived. The light slowly faded and the last felting mat was rolled into a cylinder and tied behind another horse. Borta leapt into the saddle, surprising Sholoi as he stood holding the reins. No words passed between them, but after a moment's indecision, sent her out into the gloom to roll the felt into flatness and strength. It would keep the winter chill out of the gares and make heavy rugs and horse blankets. And the rough cuts would be used for babies too young to use a latrine pit without falling in. Temujin closed his eyes against the aches. He had never worked so hard, he thought, and wondered if it would make him stronger. When Yesuge's eyes snapped open, the first light of dawn was in the east. He heard men moving close by amongst the trees, and the breath stilled in his throat. He eased himself away from the frozen ground, his fingers finding the hilt of his sword. He did not yet know if he had been seen. His eyes slid left and right, and he strained his senses, searching out the source of the noise. He heard a horse snort nearby, and then his own gelding woke and whinnied. One of his pursuers rode a mare, and she answered the call no more than 50 paces to his right. Yesuge rose like smoke, ignoring the twins from his knees and back. He took his bow from the saddle and strung it, pulling a shaft from his quiver. Now they knew his position. There was no more sound from the group, and he waited for them to show themselves. He stood as still as the trees around him. Despite the threat, he found he was enjoying the tension.
"Hello, the camp!" a voice called from his left. Yesuge cursed inwardly, knowing they had circled around. He left the gelding and moved deeper into the trees, heading towards the voice.
"I can't see him,"
another voice came from only a few paces away. Yesuge eased into a crouch, drawing back on the bow.
"His horse is here, though," a third man said.
They all sounded young to Yesuge's ear. With infinite care, he turned his head to glance behind him. Through the bushes, he could see a man pulling at the knot he had tied with the gelding's reins. Yesuge grimaced. He could not let them steal his horse. He rose to his full height, startling the stranger by the gelding. The man's hand jumped for a knife, but then registered the drawn bow and froze.
"We're not looking for a fight, old man," he said loudly.
Yesuge knew he was alerting his companions, and an answering rustle from his right sent his heart tripping at higher speed.
"Step out where I can see you, then, and stop creeping around behind me," Yesuge said, his voice ringing across the clearing.
The rustling stopped, and the young man who stood so coolly under his arrow nodded.
"Do as he says. I don't want to get stuck before I've had breakfast."
"Call out before you move," Yesuge added. "Or die, one or the other."
There was a long silence, and the young man sighed.
"Step out here, all of you!"
he snapped, his coolness fraying visibly under the arrow point that never wavered from his heart. Yesuge watched as the other four men came noisily through the brush. Two had bows with arrows notched and ready. They were all armed and wore thickly padded deals. Yesuge recognized the stitching and wondered if they, in turn, would know him for who he was. This was a Tatar raiding party, out to steal what they could. When they were all in sight, the one who had spoken first nodded to Yesuge.
"I did call the camp, old man. Will you grant us guest rights while we eat?"
Yesuge wondered whether the rules of courtesy would apply when they were not in danger from his bow. But with two of them bending bows of their own, he nodded and eased the tension on his string.
"My name is Ulagan of the Tatars," their leader said with a smile. "You are from the wolves, unless you stole that deal and sword."
"I am," Yesuge replied, then added formally, "You are welcome to share food and milk in my camp."
"And your name?" Ulagan said.
"Iluk," Yesuge said, without hesitating. "If you make a fire, I can find a cup of black arak to warm your blood."
All the men moved slowly as they set about preparing a meal, careful not to startle each other with a sudden movement. But as the sun rose, they ate well, with the dried meat from Yesuge's saddlebags and some rare honey that Ulagan brought from a pouch under his deal. The sweetness was wonderful to Yesuge, who had not tasted any for 3 years. Yet his hands never strayed too far from his sword, and the arrow remained ready on the ground in front of him.